Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning. This is Craig Bellis here for the Brown Briefly. We're having a couple of little technical issues. But I would like to just say that it was the voice of Brown, Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting, an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor, empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably always offered more. This morning, we have two of our Brieflies, Bruce Holman and Kevin Jones, that call in typically on Zoom.
I see what you're doing. Yourself.
Yep, I think we're all back together now.
As much as we ever usually are.
I was
anyway.
Going to say, we got our act together.
Well, sort of.
Yeah,
sort of.
Bruce, one more data point in how confident we are.
Bruce, I think you have the floor. I already said that was the voice of Brown, Brian Brown, so you can take it anywhere from there.
All right, great. Well, hey, I feel like we've been through another treetop air crash. But that's okay.
Somehow we survived, though.
We survived. We're walking away from this one.
I grabbed Truman by his suspenders and dropped him.
dropped me
in the mud.
Well, let me just give you a quick rundown of what happened. Our login timed out is what happened. And so this morning, I couldn't get logged in, and we got Kate, our executive director, whose login it is. She came in and logged in and set up a new meeting, but she didn't use our old login number. She gave it a new number by accident. And so I had to go in and quickly find that new number and send it to you guys. So anyway, I guess that will now be the new number. So from now on.
Okay, well, we want to be clear on that. Otherwise, we'll do this again next
week. Next week, that's right.
It's a good thing we don't have a guest struggling to get in this morning.
They'd have been lost, for sure.
It would be a little more embarrassing than this is, right?
Yeah. All right.
All right, well, let me jump into the draft script anyway. It starts out saying, guiding us from behind the board of Voice of Vachon. Well, I'm not quite sure that that's
right. Not sure how much guidance you're getting this morning, are you?
Yes, exactly. We all need guidance, but there is a moment at which you have to question.
Exactly.
So, from the Gene Bush broadcast studio from a Voice of Vachon in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, we have two of the Brieflies. The one who has gotten us off course this morning, but gradually got us back on course, and here we are, is former airline pilot. And you understand why he's former now, right? Top landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas devotee, and former military intelligence officer, and former chair of the Vachon Community Care Board, Truman O'Brien. Morning, Truman.
Good morning.
Take a deep breath.
Yes. Well, you notice that I maintained my calm demeanor during all of that high pressure. You know, that's what airline pilots do. They maintain their cool. You know,
no shouting and screaming.
No.
Oh my God, we're gonna all die.
No. Although it was internally it was doing that, but externally I showed the calm outer surface. You know,
he turned off his mic.
Exactly, I did.
That always helps.
Right? You can hear all the swearing. You know,
and sitting next to Truman is his wingmate, fellow treetop aficionado, arbitrator, mediator, two-time half-bright, Fulbright scholar, or is that half-bright, whatever scholar? I can't read my own writing here. Former constitutional law professor and Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm just Jim Dandy, and now that we're on the air, is the show over with yet?
Not soon enough, right?
I just wondered how much time we had left. So I'm doing just fine, and thanks.
Great. And I was going to say, you are the picture of calm. I mean, as the calming nature of that flight instruction pervades the Briefly studio, you are holding up your end of the deal.
Thank you. You never landed with me.
I haven't yet.
Too bad there wasn't a dash camera on board at the time.
Yeah. Oh, we have a few of those.
Yeah.
So, zooming in from home is the voice of Indivisible Vashon and the Vashon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy, who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate, or at least tolerate. Kevin Jones, welcome.
Yes. Thank you for having me again. My tolerance rating is sort of still in the marginal category, but we seek to make improvements there on that tolerance of our government.
Well, I mean, Texas passed an aid, or at least the committee in Texas passed out a bill to increase the age to own an AR-15 to 21 from
21
16,
from 18, so yeah,
19. Right. Hey. So incremental. It's all incremental, right?
Every gain is cherished.
So, and I'm Bruce Hallman, zooming in from the bluffs above KVI Beach. As Truman and Craig have probably told you, unfortunately, our guest today was not able to be here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Quartermaster Yacht Club, who is celebrating their 75th anniversary, formed in 1948, this weekend. But before we do that, let's take a moment and check in with everybody about what special things you have experienced this week. Truman, other than the snafus this morning, what's been rocking your world?
Well, you know, you've heard my appliance soliloquy. I mean, this has gone on and on and on for all the various appliances. Well, I finally replaced my dishwasher, and one of the things I noticed when I replaced that is they've changed the plumbing that supplies dishwashers these days, and they've gone to it a little different size. And so I ended up trying to kind of make this conglomeration to make the thing work. And of course it dripped, little tiny drips, driving me nuts. So finally I had to go in and completely replace the old faucet, do the whole thing. Anyway, took me 4 days, which should have been a plug and play, you know, and I'm down on my hands and knees under with my back. It was a lot of fun. So, but anyway, got it going. It's not leaking. It's working. So there you go.
Good. There are reasons. There are experts and professionals in the world.
Indeed. Right? Indeed.
Craig, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Now that my heart rate has gone back to relatively normal. Yeah, the last week's kind of been kind of interesting. Not a great deal happening, but had the morning scramble of my show on the first Thursday morning scramble last Thursday. At the fun show, Mike Nichols and I did a show entitled "Extended Play Musicians." These were living musicians that were 80 years old or older. That are still out there doing their thing. And, boy, are there a lot of great musicians.
It was a great show, by the way.
We had a lot of fun doing that show. Those are our people.
Yeah, that's it. That's the problem.
But that was a lot of fun. My wife is gone. She's gone.
She's left.
Me.
Yeah.
She
it's
left
about
me.
Time, right?
She's up in the Meadow. She goes on a ride where she has crewed for many years, called the Ride to Rendezvous around the Meadow Valley before the Mother's Day weekend up there. And this is, I think, her 24th year.
Wow.
She's been in every one of them.
Wow.
So she has a ball doing that. And then I'm dealing with the FAA and my medical certificate. I have to take all these zillion and one tests once a year, And the correspondence I've had from the FAA here yesterday and again today, or no, excuse me, yesterday, proves the old adage that the FAA is not happy until you're unhappy.
That's right. It's the old adage. I'm from the FAA and I'm here to help. Yeah.
So that's keeping me a little occupied trying to straighten all that out so I can retain my license. Just because you got to jump through a bunch of administrative hoops. So, but other than that, life is good.
Good. Well, you guys may dislike the FAA, but all of those who fly with you and who have flown in jets appreciate the FAA, despite you guys bad-mouthing it.
Yeah.
There are reasons that the government is here to help you, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
How about you, Kevin? What's rocking your world this week?
It's been a good week. We finally managed to get the boat all prepped and unwinterized and all systems checked out to where we were brave enough to go and leave the island. So, we spent a couple of evenings in Gig Harbor, which is always a pleasure. Reintroduced ourselves to the restaurant scene in Gig Harbor, which gives more diversity than what we have here on Vashon. Not necessarily any better, just a little different. But then the other thing is that we had the good fortune to go on a multi-generational hike up to Lake 22, which is up off the Mountain Loop Highway just outside of Granite Falls. And we did also go down into the Robe Valley to see about the old Everett to Monte Cristo railroad way, which when they put in that railroad to get the gold out of the Monte Cristo mining district, they put it in a little too low. And so the river would wash out the tracks every year. So we went down to admire the work they did to try to stabilize everything. And so that was a really enjoyable day out with friends.
Wow, cool. That sounds wonderful.
Sounds really good. Yeah, I just sort of noticed this. The briefings are divided into two halves, the airplane half and the boat half.
I'm a boat guy too, unfortunately, yeah.
One crossover, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm the plane and the car guy.
Yeah, that's right.
We've all found ways to deal with our disposable income, right?
Yes.
By disposing of
them. Some more rapidly than others.
Yeah.
This week for me is like Kevin, sort of getting the boat, getting the winter covers off of the boat, going through all the systems, just sort of getting it ready for summer. So, and it's always a pleasure to be down on the docks and working on a boat and sort of the water rat sort of statement. There's nothing quite so pleasurable as spending time on a boat. So, yeah. So, and it is true. So.
Isn't it mucking about in boats?
Mucking about in boats. Yes.
You're going to have an opportunity to use it. They keep varying this weather report, but the latest is Monday is supposed to be 90.
Whoa. Yes. Yeah, amazing.
And 9-0.
Wow. Yeah, right. Yeah. So Saturday and Sunday we're on the way up. It's interesting. I had a fascinating conversation with one of my friends I teach with in New Zealand. And New Zealand has been just blasted, sort of like California, with these atmospheric rivers coming out of the South Pacific. And I mean, they have just had one after another. And so very similar to what California experienced and very unusual. New Zealand's usually sort of like the Pacific Northwest, these beautiful springs, and it's their fall right now, but a beautiful fall and sort of dry and warm. And all of a sudden they're just inundated with rain, which means climate change is probably real. Yeah.
You've probably read about the 30,000 or so people that had to be evacuated out of portions of Alberta here over the last few days because of the fires already up there. Yeah. My goodness, that's early. So,
yeah, very early. Yeah. What's fascinating, too, to me is that in the past, in Australia, the fire season is basically, when our winter, so begins in November, December, and runs into April, May. Whereas our fire season, as Craig, you pointed out, this is pretty early for it. Usually it's a little bit later. And so there's always been this ability to exchange firefighters back and forth between Canada and North America and Australia. and they fly equipment, you know, these big tanker planes, all that stuff. They just move them back and forth for the opposing fire seasons. And those are growing closer and closer together. And so they're really beginning to confront sort of resource issues. You know, are we going to have additional tanker planes? Are we going to have to expand the firefighting force? Because these two fire seasons are starting to impinge on one another. So fascinating stuff. Kevin.
Yeah, I think that while, you know, we hear the news media talk about the weather and usually hear this, well, how unusual this is, I think that they need to append something to that and say, well, it's unusual, but not surprising, given the trend we're on. And I hope that that raises the awareness that, you know, this is the new normal and we can all take action to address it. But it's going to take some time to reverse the climate changes that we're going to be seeing from here on out.
Right. So today is a significant day. Today on May 9th, 1960, was the day that the first birth control pill, Envoid, was approved by the FDA. So all the things that we've seen going on, you know, in the last 5-10 years, trace back off in many ways to this sort of birth control pill and all the sort of cultural wars that have sort of evolved out of that. So a significant day, and a significant day for women, particularly, to begin to gain control over reproductive rights, and then the fight with misogynistic men often sitting in the halls of legislatures to sort of restrict that. So so fascinating to look at that. That was, what, 70 years ago now? Yeah, so 50 years ago. So interesting. So this is also the day in 1671 that Thomas Blood, disguising himself as a clergyman, attempted to steal the British crown jewel. We've always heard about the crown jewels, and many of us got to see some of them on display this past weekend, but that's what it means to steal the crown jewels. It all traces back to Thomas Blood. And for the rest of the Briefleys, and me included, 1785, British inventor Joseph Barma patented the beer pump handle.
Oh, now we're talking.
Wow. So perhaps we should adjourn to the Cobos Brewery and raise one.
There you go.
The Joseph Brahma and his great invention of the beer pump. Also, this was the day in 1800 when John Brown, whose body is moldering in his grave, we all assume, ultimately led the October 1859 raid on the Federal Arsenal at Harper's Ferry, was born. And today, in 1974, the Watergate impeachment hearings began.
Oh.
Ooh.
So we should so all it would, know, right?
So it would be a historic day for an indictment today.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It would be.
Okay. I'll set my timer.
So today we were going to a small talk. We're going to have the Vice Commodore of Quartermaster Yacht Club with us to talk about the history of Quartermaster Yacht Club and a little bit about what the club does on the island. The club was formed in 1948, essentially to allow access to Quartermaster Harbor and to sort of foster the boating community on Vashon. And of course, it's always been a large recreational boating community on Vashon from the very beginning. Yes, Truman.
You know, before we get into that, so one of the things that's always fascinated me about Vashon is that if you go to almost any of the other islands, there is a thriving community around the waterfront, and mm-hmm. we have none of that. The only thing we have is Quartermaster Yacht Club, the marina, and then Docton Park. But isn't that interesting that there's no waterfront here? Do you have any idea why that?
You asked the right person.
I thought I might. Yeah,
we do have a thriving waterfront community. We actually had two, Docton and Burton.
Yeah.
But what happened is, gradually, over time, the industries that sort of led Burton and Docton to emerge as commercial centers And Burton was originally intended to be the primary commercial center on Vashon. But King County built a concrete highway from center north to the North End Ferry Dock and then opened ferry service from the North End Ferry Dock to downtown Seattle. And all of a sudden, Burton and Docton get bypassed. The industries, the sawmills, the boatyards, you know, all those kind of things begin to fade away and they become the communities they are today. But you're right, Truman. Vashon Island is the only island in Puget Sound where the major commercial center is not on the island, not on the water. Mm-hmm. And that's because Vashon and the highway and the North End ferry dock to Seattle begins to draw away from Burton and Docton.
Well, let me just say one quick thing. It's kind of like a little town that has a freeway that comes mm-hmm. around it. And suddenly the little town kind of dies because the highway doesn't pass through the little town anymore. So yeah, that's a very similar kind of event, huh?
It is, because Burton was set up. Burton faces toward Tacoma. You know, lots of initial commerce coming in from Tacoma. And then as Seattle begins to eclipse Tacoma as the major commercial center of Puget Sound, you know, the island begins to shift its focus to Seattle away from Tacoma. The road, the ferry dock, a service right into downtown Seattle. I mean, lots of things at work. And then some very sort of astute investors in property in Vashon Town, you know, built buildings, established a bank, you know, established a movie, a theater, ultimately became a movie theater in the 1920s. So all of a sudden, you know, Vashon emerges as the dominant sort of commercial center on the island.
Sorry, Kevin.
Well, I was kind of wondering, Bruce, as you were telling that story, whether whether Vashon was being courted by the interests in Pierce County, Tacoma versus King County, Seattle, or whether Vashon was courting the markets that existed in those two towns. Hmm.
Yeah, it's really Seattle courted Vashon very much. Pike Place Market, which opened in the early 1900s, became a major source of agricultural produce going to Seattle. Actually, the first ferry that came to Vashon, first automobile ferry, ran from Portage to Des Moines. And the reason that was because King County had built a new brick highway from Seattle to Des Moines, and they wanted traffic on that highway. So they funded a county-funded ferry to run from Portage to Des Moines to put traffic onto the road into Seattle. Hmm. And it's fascinating, too, because that county-funded ferry becomes the model for, ultimately, the Washington State ferry system. Because at the time, virtually all of the ferries in Puget Sound are privately owned. By 1951, with the formation of the Washington State ferry system, there's virtually no privately owned ferries in Puget Sound anymore. And no privately owned car ferries. So interesting kind of thing. So And then the 1909 Seattle World's Fair, you know, Seattle Pacific Exhibition, you know, that they had a Vashon Day. You know, I mean, something like, you know, 2,000 Vashon people, which was almost the whole population of the island at the time, show up for that. So yeah, Seattle was courting Vashon very, very significantly.
I was going to say, so around the early 50s is when the competing ferries on the south end stopped trying to beat one another in terms of speed and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the height of that is sort of the 1890s into the 1910s.
Oh, way back, yeah.
By the 1920s, you know, that's starting to fade away because you've begun to get these automobile ferries. Tahlequah Ferry opened in 1920. The North End Ferry Dock opened in 1916. And so just gradually, you know, we went from, in the 1910s, there were 32 ferry docks around Vashon. Wow. You know, By about 1940, there were two. So in a 20-year period. Yeah.
You know, I digress for a moment, but since I've got you on this subject of Vashon, I'm going to ask you, because I get asked this all the time, where is the Mason-Dixon line on Vashon?
Basically about Cemetery Road. And it's a very fascinating thing because that's the division between the North and the South census district on Vashon. Vashon has two census districts. And I've done a lot of work with census on Vashon, but we are one of the few census districts in the United States, if not the only one, where the boundaries have never changed. Mm-hmm. Census districts constantly change based on population changes, right? So, but Vashon, because we're an island, and we've always, since very early 1880 or 1890 census, we had two census tracts, basically, and they've always been the same. So you can do some fascinating census analysis on Vashon.
You know, when back to VCC, we used to have this telling stories series that we did. And one of the speakers was actually a group of, I think it was three elders of the community who talked about the early days on Vashon. And one of the things that I found fascinating was that the roads were terrible. And so if you were on the west side of the island and you needed to go to the east side, you would just hop on the ferry and go around rather than try to fight your way across the road system.
Yeah, it was easier to catch a ferry, say, from Cove to Tacoma and to Ellisport than it was to try and get across the island.
Yeah, you know, isn't that interesting?
Sir Francis Drake did the same thing with regards to the West Coast.
The what? The what?
Sir Francis Drake.
Oh, Sir Francis Drake, yeah, exactly.
The other fascinating thing about the Mason-Dixon line, it was also the division of the school districts. So, I mean, at one time there were 13 school districts on the island, but ultimately they sort of congealed into two, Burton, which was from Cemetery Road South, and Vashon, which was from Cemetery Road North. And then working with Bianca Perla, there's a fascinating dividing line there between the sort of plant life, soil types, and rainfall that occurs on the island. So that as you go north, it's a different type of soil, different types of major trees and plants, and more rainfall. And as you go south, and particularly toward the southeast end of Maury Island, it's literally half the rainfall of the northwest side of Vashon. So Mason-Dixon line is you know, it's a political division by census tract. It's a division by schools. It's a division by, you know, by sort of ecological systems. And so it's a fascinating sort of thing.
It's a real thing, isn't it? I mean, in the sense that you used to hear from old timers about how if somebody moved, you might not see them again for months and months or years because they moved across that line.
Tom Langland, who used to own the pharmacy, tells this great story about he went to school at the Burton School, and his best friend moved away. Tom just sort of assumed he had moved off island or whatever. You know, graduates from elementary school, goes to the high school. This was before there was a middle school, and there's his friend, and he says, "I thought you moved away." And he said, "I did. I moved to the north end."
interesting.
Well, it's true. There's a lot of north enders even today you never see because they just go into Seattle.
That's true.
Thank goodness, right?
I didn't say that. That was
we're
brutal.
All south enders, we could tell.
Just one more funny sort of thing about it. When they opened the Judd Creek Bridge in the 1950s, and it was a very innovative, it was designed by the guy who designed the floating bridge at Mercer Island. And he developed this sort of a box core, concrete box kind of construction that became sort of the standard for bridge construction. And the Judd Creek Bridge is actually on the National Register because it's a significant sort of innovation in bridge construction. But when they opened that bridge, they had this big ceremony, and they actually had across the bridge, they had strung a string, and they had hung on it alternating white snowballs. You know, they weren't snow, obviously, but white snowballs and bananas. And it represented this north end, south end sort of coming together with the Judd Creek Bridge.
Oh, that's great.
That is interesting.
So lots of fascinating things about Vashon, but we could go on and on and on. But let's talk a little bit about Quartermaster Yacht Club, because the Yacht Club's been around for 75 years. Kevin, you want to just talk a little bit about your involvement with the Yacht Club?
Well, I joined in fairly late, although I've been on the island for about 30 years now. I think I joined the Yacht Club maybe 8-10 years ago when the new docks went in. And it was interesting to me to hear the dialogue of the club members who had preceded me and those club members who actually built that facility and built those original docks by hand. And maybe they were actually the second generation docks that got replaced, I suspect. And the framing of that was around equity in your home. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, the club members would invest in this equity with their time and their energy and their labor and their knowledge. And so that's how it got built in the first place. And now the new docks are like, we're going to like get a loan. it was like this big departure, right, from this do-it-yourself approach. But that did also, from my perspective as a latecomer, did sort of really alter the reality of having your boat there on that dock, because you had to find a place temporarily for your boat to be while the docks were under construction. And you can imagine that people who were like in a really comfortable, I'll use my boat once a year and otherwise I don't pay much attention to it, all of a sudden, you know, there's this big burden. And so I think it really pretty much disrupted a lot of the membership, which was interesting because it opened up for me and Susie a much more rapid ability to get our boat out onto the dock. So that was one thing that I noticed in my short tenure.
Oh yeah, and I think any of us who have been involved with organizations on the island has seen that kind of change. I mean, most of the island organizations, you know, Vashon Allied Arts, the Yacht Club, the Sportsman's Club. I mean, they began with people who essentially built it by hand, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. the Sportsman's Club building, you know, I mean, Masa Mukai on his bulldozer the road in, you know. The guys constructed this very unusual log building construction where the logs are vertical rather than sort of Lincoln log kind of horizontal. But that was all done in the late 30s and early 40s and done by hand, you know, done by members. Same thing with the Yacht Club. Allied Arts, you look at the beginnings of Vashon Allied Arts. Same thing with the nursing home.
You know, the airport, you know.
The airport district, yeah. I mean, you just go through all these Vashon organizations that have been around for 50, 70, 80, 100 years, and they've all seen that transition going on. Yeah, Truman.
So a couple of things. Modern day Yacht Club, how many members and what kind of activities are sponsored by the Yacht Club? I mean, are there programs that are available and so forth?
Sure. Yeah, right. Yeah. Number of memberships, I think it's around 140 memberships, and those would be family members or individuals, you know. So probably close to 300 people involved in the club or more, if you include children and grandchildren, on and on and on, right? Yeah. So it's a sizable organization. It does a number of things. Maybe, Kevin, you want to talk about the tech talks?
So the club has, I'll go beyond that a little bit. The club has different ways to join. So you can join as a member with a boat and a place on the dock, you know, have a slip. There's a waiting list to get on as a boat owner. There's also a social membership. So either folks who are coming into boating who want to, you know, like rub elbows and get a little bit of like, what's boating like here on Vashon, you know, have that opportunity, or people who've decided they're at the end of their boating careers and decide that they will still want to be part of the camaraderie of the boating community, but they don't have a boat that they want to maintain anymore. And, a great way to maybe catch a ride on a boat, you know, if you don't have a boat, is to, you know, befriend the folks there. I know that sailors, I don't think they have, at one time they had a pretty regular midweek sailing like a race out in the harbor. I don't believe they have that anymore. But sailors who really do sailing are always looking for crew, right? So that's maybe another way to get involved in on the water. The Tech Talks that Bruce mentioned is sort of a gathering of members to address a particular topic of boating. And I sort of, the club had always had Tech Talks, like we'd go out on a rendezvous and invite somebody in to talk about a topic. But we took it a step further to identify a topic of interest, build some information around that, invite these experts from the club, some of whom have built their own boats and sailed at least partway around the world. And they lived to tell about it and came back to tell their tales. Some folks are captains, you know, licensed captains. Others have had amazing experience with either blue water or just sailing in the protected waters of Vashon Mori. And there's so much to learn about boats in terms of maintenance, in terms of safety, in terms of piloting, navigation. All of those have become Tech Talks. And those, while not as prevalent as a few years ago, they're now being offered again. They're open to people in the community. So, you know, watch for the Beachcomber Happening section. If you cruise around town, watch for posters and stop into a Tech Talk. You'll be able to just sort of check out some of the club members and others who are joining to talk about boating. And, you know, we're an island, so boats are sort of a natural if you're an islander.
Sure, yeah. The Yacht Club also, I mean, a lot of number of other things that go on down there. We have a registered state-approved pump-out station that's open to anybody. You know, so the part of the provisions of the state lease that we have for the land under the docks was to provide a pump-out station. So we have that ability for boats to pump out their sewage into an approved sewage system. We also have at the end of the dock, King County has for almost 15 years now, has a weather and water temperature and temperature turbidity monitor at the docks. That's just, you can find online and you can always check and see what's happening with the weather at Quartermaster Harbor through that. We have a sailing program that's been going on really since about the 1960s when the Yacht Club first began a sailing program for kids. They had families build their own El Toros. El Toros are 8-foot prams that are you can make with basically one sheet of plywood. And so in the 1960s, they sponsored families building all these El Toros and had an El Toro fleet for a number of years. And then in the 90s, moved to a fiberglass boats, and since the 1990s have been running a very successful summer sailing program.
And what's the name of that program, Bruce?
It's the, I can't quite remember, but it's something about youth sailing program.
Yeah, I always wanted to unravel the mystery of the, what I think is officially known as the, can I say this, Bruce? Is it
okay? Of course.
Bruce Hallman Junior Sailing Program.
Yeah.
And I'd always sort of thought of it as, oh, it's a sailing program for kids. But I was told, no, that's not true. The junior sailing program is for everybody. And so I got to wonder about this naming, nomenclature.
Oh, yes. No, it should be changed for a number of reasons. But it's... It began as a sailing program for kids, again, back in the 60s and for families, but they had summer sailing races and El Toros, all that kind of stuff. But from the 90s on, it began really as a youth sailing program. And then we got huge demand from adults who said, well, I want to learn to sail too. And so every summer we do weekend sailing programs for adults, as well as the weekly sort of programs for kids. They run basically Monday through Thursday and, have essentially a beginner's program for 8 to 10-year-olds and then a junior program for 11 to 15, 16-year-olds. And it's a fascinating program. And in my sense, we often think of programs like that are about teaching kids how to sail. But one of the equally important parts to me is the sailing instructors. Because what you do is you get young kids who have been in the sailing program when they're 13, 14, 15 years old, you make them apprentice instructors for a year. When they're 14, they can get certified as a sailing instructor. And then at 16, they can become, you know, full-fledged U.S. Sailing Association certified instructor. And so the program's as much to me about teaching kids how to sail as it's taking these young adults and teaching them responsibility. I mean, you got 30 kids out on the water. You know, they all have life jackets on, but, but you know, the water can be a dangerous place. They learn to drive the chase boats. They learn to pick up kids out of the water. They learn how to sort of work with groups of kids and keep them under some kind of control. So it's a fascinating sort of two-part program in my mind. And a good example of it is many of you may know the Waltzko family on Vashon. They, mm-hmm. they took off for a cruise around the Pacific, a two-year cruise around the Pacific when their kids were relatively young. I think Madeline, the youngest, was maybe eight or 9 years old. She came back from that. She became a sailing instructor. She went on to maritime school, and now she's a second mate on these big cargo boats that go all over the world. And so kids get in sort of engaged with the water, you know, through programs like that. So, yeah, Kevin.
And her dad, by the way, mm-hmm. is currently remodeling what's known as the hut. And mm-hmm. the hut is the structure down on the water, on the dock, right there on the waterfront, which is basically the meeting clubhouse for the yacht club. But the one thing about yacht clubs is, you know, the yacht clubs have certain reputations. And so this yacht club, for example, in the remodel of the hut, members are doing that by themselves. If you go down there right now, you're going to see all kinds of debris spread everywhere to make sure to get that Truman. Is probably looked like your kitchen a week or
yes,
so ago.
Yes, yeah.
On steroids. And so there is still a lot of, you know, coming together, working as a community to keep the facility going, to make it run. And the one thing I should say, right, this Saturday, Bruce, is opening day.
Yes, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if, you know, you happen to be on the Burton Peninsula, have a chance to go to Docton, when you see a line of boats coming sometime in the afternoon, I'm not quite sure what the schedule is, but at some point during the day, you're going to see a line of boats from the yacht club going down to Docton, coming back. That is the annual opening day Quartermaster Yacht Club boat parade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go grab a lawn chair, hang out there at Docton Park, and, you know, sometime in the afternoon, they'll come by.
Yeah, actually starts at 11 a.m.
So, thank you for that.
Sort of 11 to 12:30, 1 o'clock, there'll be boats parading around the harbor. Yeah, Truman.
Well, I lost my train of thought. It sailed away. It'll come back. So
it's out of the station, right?
Yeah.
Greg.
Maybe it flowed over this way. Do you have reciprocal rights with other?
That was it?
Oh, it was really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I sent it over to you. Yeah. Thanks.
Amazing.
Because,
mind meld.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to some yacht clubs that are, hesitate to say, a little fancier than ours on the island, like the Corinthian Yacht Club in Tiburon and places like that. Can you just cruise in there and then use their facilities?
Yeah, we have reciprocals with yacht clubs all up and down the West Coast, mostly in the Puget Sound, you know, Gulf of Georgia, you know, so sort of British Columbia and Washington State yacht clubs. But we have reciprocals with yacht clubs down the coast. Yeah, and it's the idea that you can come in and stay for a few nights, you know, very, very minimal charge, sort of charge for electricity if you hook up. But yeah, that's one of the advantages of a yacht club is that kind of reciprocal privileges that you have with other yacht clubs. Yeah.
That's so weird. Truman, you and I have been hanging out together
way too long. Way too long. But seriously, that was my question. And boom, it went right over there to you. I appreciate that.
Well, you know what they say, flows downhill.
Yeah, I do know.
So let's move on a bit into a sort of a maybe some state and local kind of stuff. We've only got, 10 minutes or so left here. So Kevin, Jay Inslee is not running again for a fourth term. So what do you see happening out there?
Yeah, Jay's stepping down. I think, is he going to go on to be the next Al Gore is kind of my question, given his climate chops that he's refined through a presidential run, as well as his work here in Washington State as a governor, and has really set national climate policy here in the state of Washington, which I personally really appreciate. But it's the intriguing part, and I think the Seattle Times may have had an article about this, about the dominoes that are going to fall now that the governor's chair is open. Who's going to be vying for that? And then what chairs are open because of those who are moving to vie for the governor's chair? So we know for sure that Attorney General Bob Ferguson is going to be, he now has an exploratory committee to look at running for the governor's seat. I think that unofficial committee probably started, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. So now the question is, who's going to run for the Attorney General's seat? And it turns out that Senator Monka Dhingra, who is in the 45th legislative district, which is in the north of it's on the east side, kind of east of Seattle, north of, I don't know, Sammamish, it seems like, is where we went. The very first candidate I ever knocked on a door for to get out the vote was Senator Monka Dhingra. She won that election. So she has her name in the hat for that. And who knows what else might happen, as we look forward to changes of seats.
So Craig, my question is, you were an assistant attorney general. I mean, how important is who the attorney general is? How important is that?
It's very important. The attorney general, like virtually any criminal prosecutor or civil prosecutor, the attorney general is almost entirely civil with some criminal responsibilities. But it's a discretionary position in terms of you make your own work. You make as much or as little as you want to make. You prosecute or you work on topics that you want to work on. Legislation, enforcement, it can make a huge difference. It's like the antitrust provisions in the federal code and who the attorney general is. Are they going to be enforced, or is business going to be permitted to run amok? Just as one minor example. So it's a big deal.
And what about, is it Georgia that voted to or established a way that the legislature can the attorney general? What in the world is that about?
That's an ongoing balance of power issue that we've got going on at the federal and state levels. Part of the new reality.
Yeah. Strange.
Yeah. Kevin, you had something?
Well, I was just going to say, I've been listening to Craig there. It sure sounds like a possible future attorney general talking. So I was very knowledgeable. I don't know. Exploratory committees are the thing nowadays, Craig.
Maybe. I think that ship has sailed. To follow on with the theme.
There we go. So I shouldn't announce an exploratory committee for the committee to elect Craig Bellis as the next attorney general then. That wouldn't go very far.
No, although I would take a seat on the United States Supreme Court if I could get some more friendly individuals there.
I think you'd have a wide support from your fellow islanders for that.
Thanks.
Hey, that's a great segue, Craig, into this question I had. Can you enlighten us a little bit about the ethics of the Supreme Court of the United States and what's going on with the seeming lack of ethical sort of standards for the Supreme Court?
Yeah, it's actually an abomination. It's the only court in the United States that doesn't have an ethical code that's been adopted or an enforcement methodology to deal with the transgressions in terms of conflicts of interest or appearances of unfairness. They are way overdue. For adopting some kind of ethical responsibilities, because the opinion, public opinion with regards to the court is probably as low as it's almost ever been, or at least in the last 100 years.
So the question I have though is can they adopt a lower court's code of ethics, or do they develop their own? Do they have someone in put it on to them? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, you know, under Marbury versus Madison, they basically are arbiters of our government, how it's set up, and what the Constitution requires. Right. Generally, I think what's going to happen is they're going to have to eventually bow to public pressure because they are losing face and faith because of their, questionable ethics. I'm an arbitrator by profession, and you should see the work and the time I have to put in. I'm not asking for sympathy, but but just by comparison, that I have to put in before I accept a case. I have to spend about a day doing conflict checks with everybody involved in the case, going through my entire monetary portfolio and all my associations and whatnot, and write this all down and provide it to the parties before I'm permitted to proceed with the case. And that's standard operating procedure. I have a document that's like 6 pages long that I have to fill out before every single matter that I accept.
Wow.
So that the parties have faith in my neutrality.
As an airport commissioner, of course, I have to fill out the
public disclosure
forms. Yeah, yeah. which that's nowhere near as complex as yours, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like it's a normal thing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you guys have to fill out a form if you sell your house or if somebody pays your kids tuition?
Yeah. Yeah, as part of it. Yeah, no, we do. Yeah. Or if we go on a cruise. No, that's not part
right,
of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How about your airplane?
Yeah,
right?
No, that doesn't count. No. Sorry.
The bottom line there is I think that it's long overdue. They're not having a code of judicial conduct is really a horrible mistake and it needs to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. So, Craig, given that it's long overdue and they have the pathway to get there, what's your prediction of are they going to get there?
I don't think this particular court's going to get there. Yeah. I think when I say this court, I mean the members of this court. Mm-hmm. I think that you're going to need a few new members of the court before they actually make that move, unfortunately.
Yeah, and why do you think that's the case?
Because they're all crooked.
Because it's no, they're not all crooked. But once somebody has power, it's difficult to wrench it away or give it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so like there's no forcing function to make it happen, I assume. So they're not going to be motivated to make it happen.
That's right. That's right. Oh, and by the way, any code would just so we understand one another. It's not going to require them to affect their judicial decisions or what is precedent and what isn't the law. It's going to address issues like financial, conflicts and the appearance of fairness issues.
Well, thanks guys. We've only got a couple minutes. So any thoughts about CNN's decision to have a town hall? With former President Trump as the star.
I loved your comment, Kevin, but I'm not going to repeat it on the air. But.
So CNN is giving airtime now to what? The disgraced, twice impeached, and soon, probably, in the E. Jean Carroll's case, to be the results of that are likely to say that, yes, he likely assaulted and raped E. Jean Carroll. Now we kind of have to wait for what the jury says, and you have to decide whether that's compelling or not, because it's clearly just an assertion of the two parties. But it's not clear to me that you should be giving airtime to somebody, particularly one who's so amazingly untruthful. But we'll see how it goes.
Well, Caitlin Collins, I think is her last name. She's the moderator. She is going to have her hands full, especially being a woman dealing with a misogynist like Trump. It's going to be very difficult. I don't see how. CNN's ratings are going down, and they claim that they need to represent both sides and all of this sort of thing. I just think it's a mistake. They normalizing his behavior and the attention that they gave him and when he won the election, I think played a large role in his being elected. So it'll be interesting.
Well, another fascinating Brown Briefly. We've managed to while away another hour of your time, taking you down rabbit holes, often undiscovered rabbit holes until we get there. But for the next edition of the Brown Briefly, we will have Senator Joe Wynn to discuss the work of the legislature, what has been accomplished this term, and the work still to complete during the special session. Is there a special session going on right now?
It starts on the 16th. So Senator Wynn is able to join us. His brand new job, by the way, was as the chair of the Senate Environment Committee. So he's in a new position there. And unfortunately, Representative Alvarado, who's going to join us the week after, she will be impacted by the special session. So we're working to reschedule.
Great. Good. Thanks. So for Kevin, Truman, Craig, and I'm Bruce Holman, see you next week on the Brown Briefly.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us.